Attention all business owners. David Nagel here with an important question. Are you tired of struggling with overwhelm, feeling like you can't create a steady income, and dealing with worry and anxiety because you don't have a solid plan? Believe me, I've been there, and no matter what level you're at, these are all symptoms of some larger internal issues at play. If you're ready to figure out what's blocking the success that you know is meant for you, I have the solution that you've been looking for. Join me at the Art of Success Summit on June 26th through 28th, live from the comfort of your own home or office. Now, over these three life-changing days, you'll learn how to overcome your terror barriers, identify your biggest blind spot, and create a plan to get you where you want to go in record time. Don't miss this opportunity to transform your business and your life. Right now, we're offering some really great cashback bonuses and our lowest ticket price, but that will increase very soon. Visit lifeisnowinc.com/summit to secure your spot today. Again, that's lifeisnowinc.com/summit. Hope to see you there. And now on to this episode of the Successful Mind Podcast. Successful people learn how to make their minds work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. Hey, everybody, David Nagel here. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. My guest today is Bob Gavreau. He's the founder and CEO of Gavreau Accounting, Tax Law Advisory, and he's the best-selling author of The Wealthy Entrepreneur. He's a speaker and a business coach. Bob is an award-winning FCPA who works exclusively with entrepreneurs to help them make more money and gain financial clarity in their businesses. As a financial expert and author, Bob shares his insight and wisdom as a public speaker, is often cited in major business journals related to money, finances, and entrepreneurship, and works directly with more than 500 businesses across North America, helping them build a better business and generate greater financial performance. Bob challenges the status quo within the accounting industry. Unsatisfied with the limitations of conventional accounting, Bob turned down leadership opportunities with a global accounting firm for a life of entrepreneurship. His passion for helping entrepreneurs gain financial clarity and generate greater financial results in business led him to trade customary for creative, establishing a new and innovative firm concept. The firm he founded in 2008, Gavreau Accounting Tax Law Advisory, is now one of Canada's fastest growing businesses as recognized by The Globe and Mail, Maclean's and Financial Times. The global pandemic has created an unprecedented demand for strategic financial advice in just the last 2 years alone. Bob's dedication to helping entrepreneurs has led to the expansion of his business advisory services, including his best-selling book, The Wealthy Entrepreneur, which I highly suggest you get, and his mastermind coaching program, The Million Dollar Year, and his virtual event, The Ascent Summit. Please welcome Bob Gavreau. Okay, so Bob, let me ask you a question here. What do business owners need to know about and do with their finances to set themselves up for success in their business? That seems to be a real tripping point. A lot of the entrepreneurs that we work with are new, or they've been struggling for a few years, and what they have not paid attention to is their finances. They're just concerned with earning money. What do they need to know?
Yeah, and so I usually say, and I've got this concept that I call profit simple. And my profit simple concept is that there's three components of your financials that we need to be aware of. We need to have them up to date, which it sounds like maybe a lot of business owners are up to date. Has to be accurate. So we need to make sure that the information we have is actually, you know, relevant and accurate. But then there's a level of interpretation. And we need to be able to have the first two pieces, but they're actually pretty useless if we're not using that information to make really good, informed decisions. And so one of the challenges I see with a lot of business owners is that they don't pay attention to this and they're not actively putting in a scheduled financial review time. And I can give you a quick little example, David. I had a butcher shop client a few years ago, and he was about $1.5 million in revenue and very, very mature, consistent business. The guy pulled in a couple $100,000 a year, every year net. It was great, you know, and he enjoyed it. And then all of a sudden we got hit with a fuel surcharge. And this was one of those conversations when I had with him was, okay, we're the accountant. We meet with you at the end of the year, but you should be having this financial review. In fact, have it with us. We're happy to give you the insights on a regular basis. It's an investment, but man, the power of having that information. We got to the end of the year, and because the fuel costs had gone up, all of his purchases had been hit with this fuel surcharge. And by the end of the year, he wasn't making his 200. He was actually losing about 150, all because he wasn't paying attention to the financial information that was ahead of him and not interpreting it to make informed decisions. Like, you and I would have looked at this and said, well, not only from a mindset standpoint do we have to continue to increase our price, but you could have relayed this price increase on your customers and continued to, you know, have that $200,000 a year, but he wasn't paying attention and wasn't having that financial review to really give himself, you know, the upper hand to being successful. And he just missed that opportunity.
Did he not even know that that surcharge was implemented?
He didn't even know, because he, you know, I think everybody was at the point where we realized that fuel surcharge was happening, but he consistently had cash in his business and, you know, was just more so managing by the bank account, which is a no-go, guys. We can't manage by the bank account. We have to actually review these things, and thought everything was going okay. But by the end of the year, he had started to see his cash dwindle a little bit and thought, you know, I should probably have a better understanding of it. But by the time we got to the end of the year, his business was in some trouble.
Now, is that... So if somebody was working with you specifically with this, would you know to let them know that, hey, listen, the government's implementing this surcharge, or the city increased this tax or sales taxes? Like, would you be able to let somebody know that? How would they find out that it's even happening?
So, and I think part of this is getting that regular monthly review in and having it structured in a way that can give you these insights. So one of the ways that I always look at financials is I will look at, you know, maybe even the last 6 months on a month-to-month comparison, so that we can look and say, where are things changing? And I think there's a few key elements. One, revenue. We know revenue drives our business. If we don't have revenue, we're not sustainable for the long haul, right? It's got to happen. But our profit margins are really important. And when we think of our profit margins, we look at revenue minus the cost of delivering that revenue. So depending on your business, right? If we're in professional services, that tends to be labor is our cost of delivery. If we're selling, if we're e-commerce or we're retail, you know, we've got inventory purchases that we're reselling. So we take all those costs in, and we should see a profit margin at the bottom end of that every single month. And if it's going down, we likely need to make some adjustments. And if we're not paying attention to that and it continues to go down on a month-to-month basis, we've got problems by the time we get to the end of the year. And the other piece, looking at, you know, the fixed expenses or the overhead of a business, looking at all of those, and I know there's so many, you know, dues and subscriptions that we get in there. I know myself, I'm guilty of Apple paying a few extra dues and subscriptions. I know I've had a couple CRM platforms active a few times, and it's very quickly you can identify, if you're looking at a month-to-month basis, where costs are getting out of control. And it's not a complicated rocket science sort of system, but it's just the fact that we're going in and we're being committed to reviewing this on a monthly basis. We can pick things out and make positive change.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's funny you should mention that, actually, because was it about a week and a half ago, I was looking at credit card expenditures for the, you know, we get them every week. Our bookkeeper sends them in every week. And I was looking at them and I'm like, I don't even use that stuff anymore. So I actually put a half a day aside to just sit down and go through those subscriptions that, you know, things that you signed up for and get rid of them and cancel them. And it can be, because it can get significant after a while.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, just think of it. You know, it's probably at least one child's annual tuition fees for post-secondary education, right? It's amazing. $500 a month, $6,000 a year. You know, you take that maybe times two or even times one, and it's, you know, it's a lot of money and it's wasted money, and we need to stop being wasteful.
Right, right. So another thing that the people that I work with do a lot is they get involved in what we call a quantum leap, right? They have big cycles in their business, big cash injections, and then they have lulls where they're not actually making a lot, but that money's got to stretch, and maybe even up to 6 months at a time. Like when I first started, I would do two seminars a year, and I would do like a June seminar and a January seminar, and then that money had to make it for the next 6 months. But I didn't understand how the tax worked with that. So people are doing this and they don't, what do they need to set themselves up for from a tax preparation perspective when they're expecting to actually do large sums of business and then not do anything for a while?
Well, I think from my perspective, the greatest tool that we can actually implement in our business is doing some form of, and I know it seems very boring, right? But when we're identifying, here's our goals, this is the expectation. If we're doing two seminars a year, what does that look like from a revenue standpoint so that we're building out the financial profitability of our year? Because I think that's one piece. And then the second piece is tracking what your results are right now and making sure that we have a plan. There's nothing worse than, you know, I've been in on the other side of this conversation too many times where it's surprise, you owe $50,000 or $100,000. Yeah. And that's not the news anybody wants to hear. So just tracking your profitability throughout the year and being prepared for the fact that there is a liability that's being incurred on an ongoing basis. Now, consistent businesses are much easier to predict that, right? If I make $10,000 this month and I know my tax rate's somewhere around 20%, I should have $2,000 put away sort of as an installment. But when we're going from more of a cyclical high income earning quarter or semi-annual, it does become a little bit more challenging to predict that. But if we're looking at a budget and you know what you typically do at your events, you know, let's say it's $500,000 and the cost to put it on are 100, we've got a profit of 400, but that 400 has to last us. You know, what does that 400 lasting us look like? Are we still going to have 200 left by the time we get to the next seminar? Or are we going to have nothing left?
Right.
And by budgeting that and just seeing what that looks like and tracking the progress, we can determine how much we should be putting away. And I think I'm not a huge profit first person.
I'm actually not.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think it's complicated. Right. And I think there's some missing elements to it, but I do like the psychology of spending component of it. And I do like the savings component of it that can be introduced. So from a tax standpoint, I love the fact that it produces a frequent tax installment to say, let's take this percentage of our income, 2%, and put it toward taxes. At least we're making that commitment up front instead of being reactionary.
Does it matter what kind of a business entity they've set up, like whether they're in a C corp or an S corp? When I first got into business, I have no idea why this happened, but the first accountant that we sat down with told me I needed to be in a C corp. And then we found out that we were paying double taxes and we should have never been put in a C corp. And we managed to get out of it, but it took time. It took over a year to get out and then switch over to an S corp. So how does a person know which one they should actually be in, or an LLC, or how do they know?
Yeah, well, and it's a great question. And every individual should have this as an analysis. So one of the biggest pieces when people ask me, Bob, what do we do to put ourselves in our best tax position? The number one way, David, is to make sure that our structure is the right one for us. So in your case, when you're talking about your C corp and you've got double taxation, that should have never been an outcome for you. You know, sometimes it does make sense for a C corp. And maybe just quickly talking about the difference, you know, an LLC allows us to get the protection of a corporation, but allows us to still be taxed as an individual. It flows through to us. So sometimes an LLC makes sense if our income is maybe a little bit lower, because as we continue to earn more money, our tax rates continue to rise. So as an LLC with a lower income, it maybe makes sense. Where when we start generating substantial income and you start thinking of, you know, the bigger companies that have 100 employees, you know, $50 million in revenue, multiple shareholders, that's where the complexity of a C corp really comes in. And then there's the hybrid of having the LLC that gets taxed as an S corp, which is likely where you're at, where yeah. it just incorporates that lower business tax rate, and then doesn't necessarily flow through to you personally, but we look at different compensation strategies to get money out tax efficiently too. So there's a lot that moves around for everybody. C corps, you know, if you've got a foreign investor, they likely want a C corp.
Which
is interesting because it allows the foreign investor to get the money out of the country a little bit more tax efficient as well versus an LLC. So there's lots of different moving pieces. The number one thing is make sure your structure is right for you, and you've got to get the professional guidance to make sure it's right.
What do they need to know about their finances in order to grow their team and get the support that they need while they're still taking care of their own financial needs?
Again, I'm going to throw it back to everybody's got to do that monthly financial review. We need to know where we stand because, and I talk about this a lot, Dave, and you know, if I talk about my mission is to empower entrepreneurs and small business owners with that information so you can be confident to make informed decisions. Right. And just having it up to date and sitting there, if you don't know what it means and you're not looking at it, it's not giving you that confidence to know that you're making the right choice. And, you know, our mission is to empower all entrepreneurs to have that confidence to change the world together. Right. If we can continue to maximize our impact by making informed decisions, really, really solid. And one of the things that I would say is, again, we want to understand what's going on in our business. We want to understand our profit margins, and I'll probably refer to profit margins a lot. If you think of a business that's continuing to grow and you're hiring someone who's delivering or helping deliver the services, we know the cost that goes into delivering that service. If we actually take their salary and we divide it by the profit margin, it will tell us the revenue we need to break even on that new person. So for someone who's looking at growing and scaling their business, we need that profit margin to say, okay, if we add somebody, which may come at a cost of $100,000, what revenue do we have to generate before we're at a break-even point? And that's really important because a lot of people get into, well, we're just going to hire, but no outcome-based approach to saying, how quickly can we get back to a point where this isn't financially impacting us negatively. We need to know how we push the bar to the next level. And just being aware of these financial numbers in our business gives us that sort of power and control.
But that's also having the knowledge to make strategic hires, right? Like when, because people will say to me, well, who do I hire first? And I'll be like, you want to hire the person that's going to have the biggest impact on the income in the beginning so that you have the ability to pay them. If it's just going to be a drain on the income, even if it lightens the workload, there's only so much that you could do to earn money by yourself. And then you hit the, you know, diminishing returns, so to speak, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Revenue generators are always going to be, you know, the easy first hires because they're bringing in money to pay for themselves. Right. And I do see a lot of businesses where they think they get to a point and they start to build out this management group, but maybe don't have the financial resources to support it because they're not generating revenue. They're just helping lead the organization. We have to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place to be able to support that. And I kind of liken that to, you know, leadership, non-revenue generating to building a house. You know, if the house and the foundation is too little for a big roof, it's going to collapse.
Yeah.
So we need to have enough support there. But if the foundation is too wide and the roof's not big enough, it doesn't even make sense for us to do it. The house is never going to get built. So we have to pay attention to it. We have to continue to invest in the right people at the right time, but revenue generators are for sure the easiest ones to add.
What do you think about businesses that run into the problem where they know that they're going to have a large tax bill, but the philosophy, because I've had a lot of people that have heard, I actually heard Grant Cardone one time said that he, instead of paying the government, he went out and bought a plane. He spent $50 million to buy a plane instead of giving it to the government. And people will ask me, and I'm not a tax person at all, so I never know what to tell them, but they'll say, can I just take this money and go spend it on something so that I don't have to actually spend it, give it to the government? What's your philosophy on that?
I love that. And even just before I answer it, Grant, that's hilarious. And it's so something that Grant would say.
Yeah,
and I appreciate it about him because he captures interest. But it's also a very challenging conversation because we liken that to the guy next door. You know, the guy next door, well, he just deducts everything. He deducts, his personal jet or his yacht in his business. And that's totally fine. And, my answer is usually, well, that's great for him. But if the IRS takes a little peek at this, that's a non-deductible item. You know, he's likely, because it's intentional, he's likely in a lot of trouble. So for sure, there are different times where there are more aggressive tax opportunities. But David, this is what I'll put back. And I get this question all the time, right? What should I spend money on so that I don't have to pay the IRS money? And I usually say, spend it on me. I'm fully deductible. David, I'll take all your money, right? Yeah. But let's think of this. So we've got $100 of income. Let's say our tax rate's 20%. We have to give the government $20 for taxes. We're left with 80 in our pocket. Switch it around and say, okay, I don't want to pay that 20. What do I spend money on? Okay, so you spend $100, right, to wipe out your income. And in fact, you're going to save 20 because you've got this tax deduction. So now you've got $20 in your pocket. If you pay the taxes, you have 80. If you spend some money to get a tax deduction, you have 20. So which one's better? Well, the 80 is better. We're just not happy about it. But if we spend something in our business, it better be worthwhile because it's consuming 80% of our resources. So I always say, don't spend money just for a tax deduction. That's not really relevant. Yes, we all want to pay the least amount of tax possible, and I will help you do that. But spending money just on a deduction, like spending money on a plane, is a ridiculous sort of deduction for people. Yeah. And we shouldn't do that. But here's the sort of the pivot or the other side of it is, let's be strategic. So in our business, let's say we've got a calendar year in our business, we've got that $100 and we know we've got to spend, 30 or 40 of that $100 in the new year on maybe a reinvestment in a new person, some training, some software, maybe some new equipment for some greater efficiency. Well, instead of doing it in March or April, let's bring that back into December. We know we're going to have to spend it anyway. So if we spend it in December versus March or April, we're going to get access to that deduction now and save that tax money in this year. So that's just being a little strategic in our timing of when we're making some of those purchases. And the other one that I love, and this is my favorite one, and I'll tell you what happened to me this week, actually, but my favorite deduction is paying our kids. So I've got a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old. My daughter is 13. She's fantastic on social media. I pay her to manage my TikTok account. I don't even know how to log into my TikTok account, David. Yeah. So, but this is the generation, right? And imagine what we pay to third parties to manage a TikTok account. Well, I can pay my daughter to do that. And she may not be as active as maybe an agency would be, but I'm able to get her as a deduction in my business. And because her income's so low, she doesn't pay tax on it. So what a great way to help, one, get my TikTok account going, and two, to get access to that deductibility. And one thing I do with my kids, and I was just setting up my son who's 15, setting up his bank account last week, and he went in and the bank accidentally told him that he had this account that had a bunch of money in it because he's been paid, but wasn't really aware that he was getting paid. And it's a joint account. And, you know, he looked and not that it was much, but it was good enough. It was about $16,000. And he said, well, what is that? And I said, well, that is the money that you get working for me and continuing to contribute towards building something together. And this is towards your education and all that good stuff. So now I'm getting that deduction. And really, he can use that for any of his sports, his education, whatever he wants. He doesn't pay tax on it, but I get that deduction. So there's some ways that we can do it smartly that allow us to get access to deductions where, you know, again, I'm going to be paying for my kids' stuff anyway. I might as well look at how I can structure that to make it deductible.
That's fantastic. I think that's great. That's absolutely fantastic. Going along with that, because you, obviously you're thinking strategically about doing something there, how do you feel about a person knowing enough about what their taxes are that they're literally taking that percentage out of every dollar that comes in? We have what we call a tax set aside account, right? Every dollar that comes in, there's a percentage that goes into that. I got myself into trouble about the fourth year that I was in business. I had a big embezzlement, $5 million. We hadn't paid our taxes. I literally had the IRS check come into my door. And with the penalties and the interest that I was getting for that, you know, I had negotiated down what I could pay just so I didn't get into real trouble with them. But with penalties and interest, I would have never gotten out of that payment. I mean, it was accruing faster than the amount, but I needed the liquid cash to be able to get back on my feet again. So we got back on our feet again in about a year. But after that, I was like, I am never going to be in this situation again. So that's when the tax set aside account came in. An accountant taught me what to do, and money goes into that. Every dollar comes in, there's a percentage, so that when we pay the taxes, it's always there. There's never a question. Usually there's more than we actually need, which is also a great, you know, that's a fun thing to find out and not a negative thing. How do you feel about that discipline? Do you think that's a good discipline for people to get into the habit of doing?
What a great surprise versus a terrible surprise. Yeah. You know, I love the fact that it's being pre-planned. So a lot of times what we do is, again, when we're looking at a budget or a forecast to say, what does this year look like? Founded on what did last year look like and what changes are we going to make? Again, why historical information is very valued. But we look at that and we say, well, how do we set this up? So if I'm going to owe $20,000 at the end of the year, if I actually set this up on a weekly basis, where it comes out of my account on a weekly basis, $20,000 doesn't seem so bad. If I have to write a check for $20,000, that seems really terrible.
Yeah.
So I actually get people to set things up weekly. And I do this, and this is maybe a weird thing that I do, David, but I pay myself weekly. My mortgage comes out weekly. My car payments come out weekly. I pay my Visa weekly. Everything comes out weekly because in smaller increments, it becomes way easier. So exactly what you're doing, you know, you're putting these tax installments away, or you're putting it in your tax account, putting it aside, you're kind of holding on to it still. So should an emergency come up, you could always steal from it if you had to. Kind of like that as well. But then at the end of the year, it's a good surprise of, hey, either we're really close and we did a really good job planning, maybe we owe a little bit, or hey, we got $5,000 that we over contributed here that we get back in our name, and we can do something fun with it. I like it a lot.
Ours are sent in quarterly. We've got them so that it's sent in, but we do the same thing every week. Everything gets paid every week. Yeah. That's what the bookkeeper and the accountant do. And the other thing is, from a psychological perspective, you don't even, like, I've been doing it for so long, it's not like you even miss it. You know, it's not this panic of giving the money. And I do, there's another thing that I do with people. I'll have them, this exercise was given to me by an accountant years ago when I first started my business. He gave me a book ledger and a pencil, right? And he's like, I want you to write down every bill that you have. He said, I want you to write every check that you pay for that bill, and I want you to do the math on this yourself so that you get, like, ingrain this in your nervous system. so that you're not afraid of it anymore. And I did that for a year, a solid year. I didn't even have a bookkeeper do it. I mean, I was small enough where I could do it where, man, I don't understand it today. It's nowhere near the way somebody like you would. But what it did for me was I practiced gratitude for every bill that I paid. Instead of being resentful for the money that I paid, I was actually grateful for it because I realized every dollar that I'm spending is something that's benefiting my life for the most part, right? And that part I'm actually grateful for. So I completely changed my energy and my attitude around how much money goes to the bills, how much money goes to the government. And I don't sweat it anymore. And because I see people that just labor over it in horrific way, like they struggle to stress from having to pay those bills. And it's like, why would you do that? Why? Those bills are there because it's making your life better, hopefully, in a lot of ways. And even if it's an emergency, you still have the ability to be able to pay for it. So that's, you know, I was just backing up what you're saying.
I love that. Yeah.
It's so good.
I love that.
It's so good. Yeah.
And I think, you know, one add on to that, David. So if we're thinking of, you know, the same weekly paying bills, you know, in smaller increments makes it easier. You've got your gratitude component towards the ability that you're able to make these payments on a weekly basis or making your life better. I would add in one more proactive step that we could do to that. And it would be to start building our wealth plan as well. Again, on a weekly basis, you know, where one of the things I try and stress for a lot of our clients is let's just try $100 a week. Yeah. Let's put $100 a week into a pre-authorized pull into an investment account, right? Pick your investment, whatever it is you want, but get it pulled out of your account on a weekly basis very quickly. And this is where, you know, maybe profit first comes in, is that psychology of spending and the money in your account. We're all really resourceful. And when we start pulling that $100 out, we replenish it pretty quickly because there's some element of mindset that's like, we always want to have X amount in our bank account. So when we pull this out on a regular basis, not only are we starting to build our wealth plan, but we replace it with new income and new earnings. And at the end of the year, we've got, you know, $100 a week is $5,200. If $100 a week, we continue to replenish, turn it into 200, turn it into 500, turn it into 1,000. Now we're really building our wealth plan when our resourcefulness has just taken over.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. It's great. I heard, you know who Dan Kennedy is, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So years ago, I was in a Dan Kennedy seminar and he said that he had all these buckets for different money, right? He had a wealth bucket. He had a bucket for this and that. And then he said, I even have a stupid money bucket where I put a little percentage into the stupid money bucket so that if I want to go and spend money on stupid shit, I can go out there and spend money on stupid shit. And I was like, that is so great because now it's no longer impulsive. It's there, especially if you know you're going to do it, right? It's there, it's set aside, and you're not having an issue. If somebody wants to work with you or learn more about what you're doing, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can check our company out. Our company's name is Govro, which is mine. Govro Accounting Tax Law Advisory. We work all across North America, accounting, bookkeeping, taxes, you know, big element of the life and also the guidance, the financial and strategy that goes into business owners. Super important. But yeah, our social channels are all at Govro CPA. Would love to connect and support any businesses. Again, that's our mission is to empower business owners to ultimately change the world together.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can send people your way.
Sounds great, David. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. If you like what you heard and you want to learn more, go to lifeisnowinc.com. I'll see you next week.